It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
To At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hang on your mistletoe, I want to get to know you. This Christmas, and as we trim the tree, how much fun it's going to be together. This Christmas, fireside is blazing bright. We're carrying.
Back at Santa Anita as we start to play our famous and greatly treasured Christmas collection. We have what I think is the best Christmas music in all of radio. In fact, you know what I thought to do yesterday as I was driving? You don't really drive necessarily around here. You it is literally... It's stop and go traffic everywhere you go. And you know, the traffic moves. You just it's a weird. I can't imagine how Angelinos how they plan to go anywhere, because you might have a place, like, for instance, going to SoFi Stadium from Pasadena yesterday. It was. Originally, it said 51 minutes, and then it ended up being about an hour and 10 minutes. And then at another time, you might look at it, and it'll be 30 minutes. So I don't know how anybody plans to do anything, you know. And I imagine everybody's always probably perpetually late around here, right? Is that a fair assessment? Dick, good morning.
Steve, we had about 6 inches of snow yesterday, but the good thing is when I get cold, I got this pellet stove cranking that I can just go stand in front of and stay warm. So it's just the best thing to have.
Well, I
wonder if they make a portable one that you could take with you.
Well, it's funny you say that because Thursday at Los Al, I was indoors. But you're indoors, but you're hanging. It's one of those old fashioned press boxes that is like, basically it feels like it was, attached to a girder, and it's like hanging from the roof. And so it's all glass enclosed, and the wind kind of whistles through. So Thursday, it was chilly, not like this. I'm suffering here. I mean, this is insanity. But then on Friday, I realized when I went to plug in my computer, there was a space heater. There was a one of those little stand up heaters.
Oh wow!
And right where I should have noticed it the day before, but I didn't. And so I turned that on, and it was delightful. And I may go buy one.
Well, I was going to say, you should have stolen it.
Unbelievable. Well,
they weren't going to miss it. It was in the corner. No,
no, exactly. It was actually under the long, they got a they actually have a very nice press box. It's not as big as the one here at Santa Anita, but they do have a very nice press box. And behind the press box at Los Al is sort of a lounge. And in fact, I know Steve Anderson sits up in that lounge. He's got his little station. And I tell you, it is that's a racetrack that, speaking about places that people are going to miss when it goes, they're going to miss it badly. And of course, the assumption is that when Doc leaves us, the Los Al will leave us, because there's a hospital and there's a mammoth church. I mean, there's a church that's the size of Staples Center down there in Cyprus, and they want that property apparently. And then there's all kinds of new home construction and condos. Cyprus is really quite nice down there, and between the Vessels Club, which is one of the nicest dining rooms in the entire industry, it just a fabulous place. Anyway, I love going there, and we're not gonna write it off just yet. So, turning our attention, Dick, to the weekend for your purposes, and I didn't want to wait till Wednesday to get the HKIR. It's actually, it's fairly fresh in our minds.
Yeah.
And that is another benefit of being here, Dick, being able to watch those races.
Yes, I wish I could have said the same, but not only watch the races, but 43,000 people were on track at Sha Tin. And you could hear the crowd. I mean, it was loud and noisy during the races, so big crowd, first big crowd since not only before COVID, but before COVID there was a lot of unrest.
Right, that's right.
In that area, so they were
right.
not having customers at all. So great crowd, a lot of excitement, great racing. With the lifting of some of the COVID restrictions, we had more international horses, more international jockeys, so it just made for a great day and some really interesting racing.
Let's walk through.
Well, the Vaz was the first race. Race 4 was the first of the Group 1s. This is a mile and a half. And it did look to be the most chaotic race in terms of Stone Age went off as the favorite for Ryan Moore and Aidan O'Brien, off his second in the Breeders' Cup Turf. Glory Vaz, who won the race last year, was back from Japan, went off second choice, but it was pretty wide open. They turned for home, and Win Maryland, a Japanese horse who was only a three-year-old, by the way, so he got the job done at 6.5-1 over Andre Faber, who I thought had retired.
That's what I thought.
And he still has a, I guess, still has a couple of horses.
I guess.
Yeah, William Buick in the Iron. So Botanic ran second, and Glory Vaz was third. Not the most thrilling race. They kind of just went around at an even pace. It quickened a little bit the last half mile. But Japanese horses at the distance races, they are super tough. One of their biggest races over there is the Tennesho Spring, which is 2 miles. And they're not afraid to run a mile and a half, 2 miles. So they seem to be well-suited for it. So they ran first and third. European ran second. And the highest local finish was Panfield, who wound up fourth. So it's kind of a weak local contingent in Hong Kong for this type race.
That was the Vaz. Dick, I forgot to print the mutuals like an idiot. What did we get mutual?
Well, unfortunately, I'm looking at it. I'm looking at the Hong Kong website. So he paid $13, the winner. And Botanic was, I got to divide by five on all these things. He was $4, and the exact that came back. Divide 5 into 630, so that's $86. Nice exactly.
Yeah.
So that was the Vaz, and then we hit the Sprint, which looked to be the most contentious race on the card. 14 horses going 6 furlongs. Now, the rail was down, which is interesting, because when the rail is out, it really affects 6 furlong races because Sha Tin is so wide as far as its turn go, and its straightaway home stretch is so long that when they run 1,200 meters with the rail out, the race starts pretty close to the turn. I don't think people recognize that enough. But when you drop the rail back to the A position, you can get 14 horses, which they did. And This was a really good race. The local horses just dominated. Wellington, who was a multiple Group 1 stakes winner. Now, his last race, he got beat. And he came out of the way. Well, sometimes too much information is not always good. He came out of the race lame. And the trainer kind of poo-pooed it. He said, yeah, he's fine, but, you know, he was lame, but he's okay, and blah, blah, blah. And obviously in Hong Kong, you got to pass a bunch of inspections in order to race. So he was pronounced fit to race, but still that kind of stuck in my head. Well, he came out of the race lame, you know. Lucky Swain seemed to be the improving horse who beat Wellington in the last start, the Jockey Club Sprint. But Wellington just sat perfect position for Ryan Moore and just exploded in the lane, one going away by 3 parts of a length. Sight Success, a very strong local horse, was second at 15-1, and Skyfield, horse last year, finished third at 34-1. So what I did in this race, and I did it in a couple races, was because of the place pools being so generous, I made a big place bet on Sight Success, and that came back $7 and change. So I look at it as like a sports bet. You know, you're betting 100, 200, and you're not laying 11 to 10. You might be getting 3-1, 4-1. So Sight Success was a terrific second with Christophe Lemaire, who seems to win all these international races, especially in Saudi and Dubai and stuff. So he was second for John Size. But Wellington, game old-timer, I think he's 7 years old now, but still throwing in big, big sprints. He did it from, you know, like I say, a wide draw, and still was able to overcome it. Lucky Swain, who was the favorite, actually the odds-on favorite, did just didn't have the greatest trip, didn't break particularly well, and with a 14-horse field, you don't even have to get checked and steady to have a bad trip. You're just behind more horses than you usually are behind. So he ran pretty one pace through the lane for Zach Purton. He was off the board in sixth place. So Wellington at 3-1 in our betting was a handy winner. And seeing Ryan Moore run over there, he's just so good. Yeah. My God. He's just awesome. You can take him anywhere, put him on anything. He's going to get the best out of the horse. So big story there. Wellington continues his, like they like to say, purple patch of success, winning the Longines Hong Kong Sprint. So then we take a break in race six, come back in race seven for the much anticipated Hong Kong Mile. And this drew a field of nine. There was a late scratch, which was Ryan Moore's mount. So Ryan didn't have a mount in this race. Now, this was Golden 60, two-time horse of the year, has won 22 out of 25 starts in Hong Kong, something like $14 million U.S. dollars in his career. Son of Medalladoro. Out of a distorted human mass, so American bred, but he was actually American pedigree, but he was bred in Australia. And he's been just spectacular, but he's 7 years old. And his last race, he ran down California Spangle in the Jockey Club Mile, the Group 2 prep for this. Now, second up, everyone figured Golden 60 would improve. Maybe he did, but California Spangle was a little more relaxed. His stablemate actually took the lead around the turn, kind of gave him a target to run at. I don't know if what tactics were being employed, but I think it helped California Spangle, because when Zach asked him to go, he went, opened up, knowing that Golden 60's coming. Last time, Golden 60 ran 21.33 last 400 meters. This time, California Spangle, at the 100-meter mark, you could, in my mind, I could see he was going to hold on and win, but Golden 60 is that good. It's not over till it's over. But California Spangle wins by about a long neck over Golden 60, paid 2-1 over here. Golden 60 was heavily odds-on backed. And it creates an interesting rivalry now, because they've met four times. California Spangle now has won once, but last year he was a three-year-old, so that was kind of unfair to him. But still, California Spangle, just fast as could be, always the horse to catch in any race he's in. And he's had 14 starts, Steve, 9 wins, 5 seconds. Well, who were the seconds to? Well, the seconds were early in his career to Rock Your Heart, then twice to Romantic Warrior, who we'll get to in a moment.
We'll talk in a second.
And then twice to Golden 60. Now, so he's been in against good company.
Yeah, big time.
Finally breaks through, gets his Group 1 stakes win. And at his age, I think there's more to come. And Tony Cruz is really bullish on him. And Tony's just done a phenomenal job with them, because if you look at his career record, he starts out 5 furlongs, sets a course record, comes back at 6 furlongs, and sets a race for Griffin horses, which are young, inexperienced horses. Then he gets beat in his first, like, parimutuel race. Then he goes on win, 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 all at 6 furlongs, all in 8 and change. So now they start the four-year-old series last spring. And the first leg is a mile while he gets run down by Romantic Warrior. Now, no concerns about stamina or anything. Tony brings him back at 1 1/8. And he beats Romantic Warrior at 1 1/8. And then he comes back in the Hong Kong Derby at 1 1/4. And he's right there to the wire. So just phenomenal horse. I was glad he won. Finally gets the breakthrough. It came at Golden 60's expense. Hopefully Golden 60's okay, just circumstances led to his defeat. But it was a really exciting race, and I just happened this time to be on the right side because I've been on the wrong side the last two times they faced each other.
But you were out in front of us, and I think that puts you. Yeah, there were. I saw. I mean, a lot of people basically put the two to them together, and that was it. But you were pretty distinct about California Spangle and his opportunity to win this.
I think he ran the fastest quarter mile in the entire meet last year, going six furlongs. He has brilliant, brilliant speed that Zach can use at a moment's notice. But under Tony, not only have they got him to relax physically, but they've got him to relax mentally. So Zach has full control over him. And when he asks him to go, the response is immediate. And he's just that good. So sets up a lot of intriguing races for the rest of the year. As far as what Tony does and what Francis Lloyd does with Golden 60. So that leads us to the final race, which is the Hong Kong Cup, which was over $4 million U.S. dollars, going a mile and a quarter. The favorite was Romantic Warrior, and it attracted a really good field with horses from Japan, horses from Europe, things like that. So even though he was heavily favored, I thought this race was pretty strong. The expected front runner, Pantalassa, never really did what everyone expected. I mean, he's had races where he's opened up 10, 15, 18 length leads, and he didn't really do that on Sunday. So he just kind of led, but didn't have the big gap, which was fine. Romantic Warrior just stalked with James McDonald. Now, he is voted the world's leading rider. Karis Teton usually rides Romantic Warrior. He's been hurt, so James shipped in for the Jockey Club Cup, the prep race for this, and won. And then Karis is still out, so he gets to come back and ride him in the next start, which is just nice deal for him. So Romantic Warrior just clicked off 23, 23, 23. They turn for home. He just eases to the front, but imperceptibly, he ran his last furlong at 11.01. That's how fast he was going. Didn't look like he was really being asked to do it because he was pulling away one by 4.5 lengths, but Romantic Warrior, just an absolute monster, who's now, I think he's 10 of 11 lifetime. I'll check that in just a second. 9 of 10, and his only loss was California Spangle. So I don't know if they have each other in mind. Romantic Warrior has kind of moved on to be more of a 10 furlong horse, where California Spangle is more of a 7-furlong-mile type horse, but who's to say Tony doesn't move him up and try him again? But if he tries him again, he's looking at just an awesome horse. Last year, Steve, Romantic Warrior began his career at Happy Valley. Now, you don't see the top young horses begin at Happy Valley. He won his first two races there. So he has gone from a 52 rating, which most first-time starters begin at, and he is at 127. He has gone through each condition and has done it so impressively. They keep adding rating points to him, which means he has to run against better horses. He has to carry higher weight, no problem. Now he's a Group 1 stakes winner for the second time, and just No end in sight. He's only 4 years old. And Hong Kong is blessed to have not only Golden 60, one of the highest rated horses in the world, but California Spangle and Romantic Warrior just joining him. And I'll be interested to see what the international ratings on those two winners turn out to be the next time Longines does that update. But I'm sure Romantic Warrior is going to be just as high as could be, and one of the top turf horses in the world.
And was really celebrated too yesterday. Yesterday morning was one of those winners that you could tell people were delighted by.
Yeah, it was a big home team win. The home team won the last three races. Now, my betting in this race was Dannon the Kid from Japan was my top pick, and I bet him the place. And he paid $8.30 the place. And then in the sprint and the mile, I bet California Spangled to win. So I had two place bets and a win bet. So those are my made four bets. I went to sleep. I was pretty exhausted getting home from Arizona, thinking I would wake up in the middle of the night. Well, I woke up at 6 a.m, so I grabbed the iPad and watched the races without knowing the results. But in California, 3-hour time zone difference. It must be nice, because watch these races live, and also watch all the pre-race commentary. Where they just do an awesome job on their broadcast.
Well, HKIR, a great way to kind of wind down the front half of the season, and for us and for them, and plenty to look forward to, though, after the first of the year, too.
Yeah, and we now have a superstar, Golden 60, and now two superstars that have joined them, California Spangle and Romantic Warrior. So I don't know if there'd be a race where all three of them would be in, or two or whatever, but it's going to be hard to run in a race without two of them in the race. So anything mile and above, you might see one or definitely two. So that's going to be really fun with the stake races and scheduling and things like that. And Tony just has no fear of running California Spangle at any distance. So he's as fast as he is, he's game as could be. Just a lot of fun. One other point, Steve. Probably the last HKIR for Joe Marrera. And rumors are that, and he talked about it openly, Zach, this might be the last season for Zach Purton. So Zach is probably going to leave Hong Kong after this season, it looks like, and he's alluded to it. And what that does is it opens up the door, because a lot of jocks never wanted to go there because Zach and Joe just dominate. So,
right.
You know, you're not getting, you know, the mounts that you think you're going to get. Well, now one of them's definitely gone. The other one is very possibly going to be gone after July. So I know there's lots of machinations going on with the club trying to recruit riders, and riders, especially in Oceania, New Zealand, Australia, seeing this big opportunity up in Hong Kong. So I'm sure we'll get filled, and I'm sure we'll be filled by, you know, top riders. But it's going to be really interesting, because you're just going to have a complete changing of the guard.
And not always. It's funny that not a changing of the guard per se. Well, out here, you know, I had that same, you know, that same inkling came up with Steve Anderson earlier this morning, with the jockey colony at Santa Anita, which, you know, having Frankie Dettori come here, and Kaz Kimura has driven across from Toronto to L.A. So you're going to have a kind of a fresh deck of cards out here with an international flavor. So that's always fun. It's always interesting to follow. And in fact, Steve Anderson made the hint out here, Dick, that he thinks Kimura will be, you know, kind of
early on will be a little overlooked. He thinks there'll be potential value on Kimura. And it'll be interesting to see who Frankie ends up latching on to in terms of, you know, he apparently wants a Derby horse, right?
Don't we all? now Johnny's going to be out there after Christmas.
Apparently, yeah, that's right. There you go.
And I heard you guys talking about Flavian. Is he going to spend the winter there?
I think right. Isn't that the plan?
So that colony just kind of blossoming.
Well, the question is, how much horse flesh? I mean, that's going to be, and we'll hopefully talk to Chris Mers tomorrow or Wednesday, and get a bit of an advance from him for the meet as well, because that, you know, that's the challenge, is keeping the cards interesting and full.
Yeah, but what a place to have that challenge.
That's true. Well, Dick, this was great. I didn't want to wait until Wednesday, and wanted to get it while it was fresh in everybody's mind, and while there's still there's plenty of discussion about it. It always and you know, speaking of discussion and Hong Kong, I think he's back for Wednesday. We might get Bill Nader to join us out here.
And, okay. Yeah, because he went to the races.
He did. He went. He and he's making, you know, some of the final arrangements as he, you know, having rented a, he found a place in Pasadena. He took a 90-day lease, he said, and he may renew, and just stay there. But we'll get the TOC picture from Bill Nader. You know, it's funny, at the football game yesterday. Yeah, being with Gary Barber, you know, racing is always going to bubble to the surface. But one of the executives from the Chargers, Fred Haas, who was on the CHRB for a term, and then kind of backed away. He said it's a, you know, in fact, this came up with Gary too, about, you know, how challenging the issues are that you know, faces California racing overall, and Fred had some interesting thoughts. I was thrilled to meet him, and he said it is a daunting task. And I said to Bill Nader last week, actually, I said that Bill's probably the right kind of guy. I mean, there's been some very good people that have tried to, you know, deal with these, you know, with the various conflicting directions. I mean, you're answering, you're representing and answering to a very wide and frankly demanding constituency, thoroughbred owners of California. And so, Bill Nader, he'll, you know, Lou Raffetto, you know, had a good term at it. Bill Nader, I think, is probably the right kind of guy for the, you know, the next little while to pilot the TOC.
Yeah. And thanks for bringing up the game last night. I guess we had a big bet on Miami and could not believe what I was watching.
They were god-awful, and they were lucky to score anything.
Yes.
They should have been beaten, literally. They should have been beaten 34-0. They were horrific, and they got a gift touchdown on that fumble, and then they had a defender fall down. Otherwise, they get shut out virtually.
And here's the narrative: oh, we played San Francisco when we stayed out in California, and we've had all this time to bond, and we haven't had to travel. So we're ready to go, and they look like they just got off a 12-hour flight. They had no legs, no head, no tour.
No,
like,
they stunk.
What is he doing?
They stunk.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. They were. It was actually pretty stunning sitting there. I was happy for the Chargers, who were all banged up, for them to get through this actually. And I know Dave Hill. I don't know if Dave's listening right now, but Dave. Dave had a difficult week. He's guaranteed to be under 500 this week. 5-7 going into tonight. Tonight he took New England. He took a couple too many desperados. It seemed to me, and yet another week of taking Tampa Bay, which I think he is finally finished with. I think he's finally given up.
Gotta get off that train.
Yeah, one of the. By the way, this poor kid Purdy. When are they going to stop using the Mr. Irrelevant moniker for this poor kid?
It'll stay with them
his whole career.
Of course, laziness of writers, but
wow,
anything but irrelevant.
It's unbelievable, and it's so unfair to him. I mean, because for those, Mr. Irrelevant, the last guy picked in the NFL draft. Except there's one thing wrong with that. There's all these UFAs, the undrafted free agents. There's like another 300 players, 500 players that got contracts behind him. So how is he? It's just such a silly. I mean, it was cute at one time, but not when a guy is lighting up the board like he was. And I must say, I took a little bit of pleasure in knowing that there were 180 Brady family and friends that got tickets to the game and got to watch that complete humiliation. They're very, very yeah.
Well, you got to see in person probably the greatest uniform.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It is
going back to Lance Allworth and John Hadle.
Well, I'm glad you went in that direction for a second. I got to get to Grand Motion, but there was something very sad actually last night. Well, for starters, more than half the building were Dolphin fans, and apparently visiting teams, snap up tickets at SoFi. Yes. And so there was this huge Dolphin fan base. But then the other problem that they've got, the Chargers, is that the San Diego faithful that followed the team back to AFL days, they're disgusted. And John Hadle died the other day, and...
Oh, I didn't see that.
John Hadle passed away, and there was I said to Gary Barber, who's a Charger fan and who almost was a partner in the franchise. I said, "Are they gonna honor John Hadle tonight?" And he said, "I don't know." He said, "I suppose it's the first home game since he passed." Well, there was a break in the action, like maybe after the first quarter, so there was like a good 3-4 minute. Opening, and they put up a tribute to John Hadle, and there was barely a round of applause. And
who's John Hadle?
I got to tell you, it was. I was sort of miffed or a little disgusted by it. That here's a home game for a franchise, and they don't know who John Hadle is. I can tell you, in Philadelphia, if Eddie Kayat died, the place would have give a standing ovation for a guy that was probably 10-40 as a coach. I mean, it was distressing, to be honest, Dick, that nobody had could stand up and clap for John Hadle.
Well, you build these big, fancy, antiseptic stadiums, and there goes your home field advantage.
Well, I don't know if I'd call this antiseptic. It's got character. It's got character, and they put on a show. I'll tell you one thing. It's dinner and a show, to say the least. It was quite something. So, Dick, I appreciate this.
All right, Steve.
We'll catch up later in the week.
Okay.
Thanks. Dick Powell, everybody. And we never know what he is right, boy. Those unis, they're, I don't think there's anybody, I don't think there's an NFL fan that doesn't recognize that those are the hottest, coolest unis going. They're just amazing. And it makes for, and actually it makes for all the apparel people had. It's the color scheme and the bolt. You know, the thunderbolt, the lightning bolt, the helmets are great. Bambi, Lance Allworth. That's the NFL that we grew up with, to say the least. All right, let's get Graham Motion in here. He's been we've been threatening a Graham Motion visit for 2 weeks, and we're going to finally get it. Yeah, and actually, it's timely. I hope Graham. It's timely because Graham's going to have horses out here for the winter again. And we'll find out. We'll find out what he's got, you know. Well, that's no good. He may have gotten, I'm 10 minutes late getting to him. I told him the bottom of the hour. So, we may need to wait for him to call me back. That's a possibility. And if that's going to happen, I will turn our attention, to the fairgrounds and get some of that stuff done. Try to be productive as we can. I may turn this over to you, Case, to get Graham. All right, if you don't mind. All right, or if he calls me back. Let's dive into the fairgrounds action from Saturday, and there were some decent price opportunities, as it turned out. And I'm glad we did this with Marcus. It started with that juvenile, and late September, of course, out of Hello Maggie May, very clever Jose Cameo, and Marcus talked about this Munnings colt, bred by Coteau Grove, but campaigned by Kevin Stedman, and late September, 5-1, wire to wire, to get the stakes side of things going. And this was a, you know, if you recall, this was a horse that went over and tried the Coventry, and back against, has actually been back against statebreds for the last three starts, ever since taking a little time off after going to Ascot, but late September with Rodriguez, who we talked about, and kind of figured this get the juvenile got an 81 buyer for this one, and out of the Lemon Drop Kid mare that might actually stretch out. Free Drop Maddie, who we discussed, went off as the near second choice. Went off at 6-5, and Nora G was closer to even money. And this was Ray Lou Gutierrez for Brett Calhoun and Mansfield Racing. Free Drop Billy wins the filly race, and this one got a 71 buyer. And Graham Motion is back with us. Graham, good morning.
Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Good morning. I've been threatening a visit from you for a week.
I know.
Happy to get you. And I'm at Santa Anita, which you may or may not know. And this will be the last discussion about the Del Mar meet, because you sent three out to the Hollywood Derby, and it was not readily apparent, you know, who might necessarily be the right motion. And at 8-1, it was Speaking Scout, and we're always rooting for the little general. As all the trainers for Eclipse knows, you got to keep Aaron happy.
Yeah, no, this is a cool horse that Aaron picked out at Colonial Downs a year ago, and he's really just been, he just keeps improving. I mean, what a neat horse. I thought he was a little unlucky last time at Santa Anita, to be honest. But he got a great ride this time, and we're going to keep him out there for the time being.
I mentioned as we were reaching for you that, you know, you're going to have this string. How many horses are you going to keep out here?
We'll probably have a dozen.
Nice.
I think we have 12 stalls, so.
Very nice. Well, this is a Mr. Speaker, and he's a gelding. So, you know, for those that feel like there's nobody to root for long term, made his ninth start of the year, too, Graham. So this is clearly a horse that's thriving on the work, something I said to Carl Broberg last hour, too, with his horse that was making, I think, start number 8 on the year.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a dilemma for Aaron and I because he has had a long year, but he's also in the best form of his life, so it's a little bit hard just to stop on him right now when he's doing so well.
You know, he's out of a Pleasant Tap mare, and given Mr. Speaker and Pleasant Tap involved in this pedigree, and this was Mike Abraham bred this horse, this feels like a horse, Graham, that is going to get, you know, better and better, 4 and 5. I mean, there's a lot to look forward to with Speaking Scout.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think he's changed a lot. Even in the time that he was at Delma, I hadn't seen him since before he went to Chicago in October. And when I saw him in Delma last week, I was just so impressed with how he's kind of filled out and grown up.
You know, it's funny. You look at a horse that, from a FIG standpoint, was running 60s last summer and into the fall. Then the calendar turned, he became a 3-year-old, starts running 70s. I'm just using buyers, which, you know, aren't always all that, you know, all that reflective for turf. But then as the year has gone on, the second half, he turned those 70s into 80s. And it just, you know, it feels like with every passing start, I mean, you said it, he's in the best career form, but it also feels like there's still more upside.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no doubt his last three races have been a significant improvement. Not that he hasn't always been hard knocking. I think part of that probably was that, you know, Juan Hernandez had ridden him at San Juanito, so he got to know him. I was so glad that he stuck with him for Del Mar, because I know he could have ridden other horses. So I think that really helped us last week at Del Mar.
What, I'm just trying to think about the calendar out here for the older horses on the turf. And as always, when we talk about these kinds of horses, the distance range and what you've got, you know, what you've got in mind, because it's clear that he can go, you know, the full route of ground, but is he maybe more of a middle distance? I mean, is this mile in the eighth, give or take, his right configuration?
I think it is. I mean, look, we ran him at Kentucky Downs a mile 5/16, which is a tricky course, but I thought he would really love it. And, you know, it just seemed to come up a little short. So I question if he really wants to go that far. You know, I think a mile and eighth, maybe we can get a mile and a quarter, but I think probably a mile and eighth could be his optimum distance, to be honest.
Very nice. And so I don't have the Santa Anita Stake schedule, but what's on here for him?
So the mile race comes up first for straight 3-year-olds. I think it's the Mathis.
Right. Yeah.
There's a possibility. I mean, he's really going to have to show us that he's doing well to run him back.
It's 2 weeks from today.
Spot. Yes. So that's going to be, yeah, that's going to be a big ask. If not, I believe there's a mile and a quarter race for older horses, either the beginning of February or later on in January. I think it's the beginning of February.
I got it. Well, you know, if he didn't love, I don't know if it's the distance or Kentucky Downs coming down the hill. I was going to say, he, you know, you go back to the Gulfstream. You go back to that Gulfstream 7.5 at, you know, the pulpit. If you're interested in running him in a mile, would you consider running him down the hill? Is he handy enough for that?
I don't think so.
No,
I think that'd be a stretch.
Okay, all right. Just curious, because he comes home, right? I mean, he finishes.
He definitely does. Absolutely.
All right. Well, Speaking Scout, and how did, when you say at Colonial, in terms of the purchase, in terms of the acquisition?
Yes, yeah, so Aaron found him. He came out of a maiden race where I think he finished second to a Delacour horse. And that's the race that that Aaron found him. After that, we took him, I think we took him up to Saratoga for a maiden race after that.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he was a little unlucky, he was beaten two lengths. Came back and won pretty nicely off the grass at Delaware. But, you know, Aaron's just very clever at finding these horses. You know, coming off, coming at obscure tracks for not crazy money.
Well, and what's fun about this is that, you know, as opposed to the business, the quote-unquote business plan that Eclipse, you know, favors in terms of buying fillies and campaigning for residual value, this is a horse that, you know, the partners are going to be able to enjoy, especially under your care. I mean, this horse could run another 5 years.
Yeah, we'll see.
Right?
Hopefully, right?
Exactly. I love it. All right. Well, speaking Scout, in the meantime, let's catch up. I've only got you for about five more minutes, so let's touch on a few other of the Turf Cup, the Turf Festival races, including the Turf Cup, the Grey Wizard, a good second.
Yeah, a little unlucky again. He's such a cool horse. I mean, not so much unlucky. He creates his own luck, this horse. He just is a slow learner. He broke okay this time, which he's tended to break slow, and then he kind of ducked away from the rail. I think he was drawn on the inside. So he really put himself in a tough spot where he had to make up a lot of ground. But I thought he ran a pretty courageous race against older horses. I think he's really got a future. Could come back in the mile and a quarter race at Santa Anita in February.
Do you want to touch on, some of the, I do want to ask you about Affirmative Lady, obviously, who ran a fabulous race in the Demoiselle last week, but, some of the other horses that you campaigned, I didn't even ask about Evan Harlan or Script coming out of the Derby.
Yeah, so they both stayed out there. There's an allowance race for Evan Harlan at Santa Anita. Script could come back into Mathis. I don't think he ran his race the other day. I really like this horse. He was very keen. He needed to settle the other day.
How about Bipartisanship, that tried the Matriarch?
She'll come back in the Frankel.
Okay, all right. So you're going to plow ahead. Feels like. Let's talk about Affirmative Lady. We can't let this slip through the cracks because that was exciting, and you got to be delighted.
Yeah, I mean, look, that was kind of a last minute decision. I thought the race was coming up a little light for graded race. I knew she'd love the distance. I've been saying to Kia, Kia from Emma Racing all along, that she's really going to appreciate the distances as they get further. Johnny was a little frustrated. He thought if he could add the trip, the winner had, you know, could have changed things around. But, you know, I know everybody's very high on the filly of Todd's, the winner. So I think we're in a good spot with this filly.
How do you come out of the end of the year with the, you know, off the mile in the eighth race? I mean, the Remsen and the Demoiselle have become sort of these,
obscure?
Not obscure. Well, I mean, there's been, obviously, well, with Mo Donegal, last year in particular, but it feels like they're, you know, lightning rod, they're a pair of lightning rod events, and you know, what do you do with them coming off a mile and an eighth?
I mean, people don't want to run a mile and eighth. I just don't understand it. I don't know where we're going in this game with distance horses, but that's a subject for another day. Listen, I think my initial thought was we need to break a maiden, but I think it'll be hard not to run back in the Busanda. That's a mile and an eighth over the same track. So I think that's going to be very tempting. I think it's on the second week of January at Aqueduct.
Very good. Well, let's touch on anybody, anything else between now and the end of the year?
Payo Alto, he'll run down. I just shipped him to Gulfstream. He'll run down there in the stake they have at Gulfstream, the Fort Lauderdale, which is right around Christmas time.
Right.
At the end of the year, I believe. Candy Light, she'll run in the Tropical Oaks the day after Christmas, and then we will run. We'll run a couple in the Oaks at Santa Anita as well. Pizza Bianca stayed with us. Christoph left her with us.
Oh wow!
After the Matriarch, and then also Sparkle Blue, my filly. She ships out there on Wednesday for the for the, do they call it the Hollywood Oaks or the...
The American Oaks.
The American Oaks, there you go.
The American Oaks.
So we got some action. We're not done yet.
No, not at all. Well, you've also got coming up at Gulfstream. You mentioned the horses that'll be there, and of course, you always send some over to Tampa too. But that Via Borghese coming up on Saturday, Lachine, the Maryland bred for Shamrock Farms.
Yeah, Mike Lakehart twisted my arm a little bit here, but I feel like it might be a great spot for her to get some black type. I think. You know, this is her distance. Again, it's going to be tough to find these kind of distance races over the winter, so why not take a shot in a stake race?
Absolute. Let me ask you finally, before we go, Graham Motion with us, unraced maidens and two-year-olds, soon to be three, anybody that we should be watching for?
I don't know about unraced. I mean, I think the most exciting filly probably at the moment is Affirmative Lady. I think there's so much upside with her. You know, we got some others that have run that I think are going to show some improvement as three-year-olds. I can't think off the top of my head of anything unraced. Disdainful is a horse we took out for Aaron to California and came up a little sore before the stake at Del Mar, so we're going to give him some time. But I think he's an exciting three-year-old prospect on the grass. Essoria is a filly for Al-Shikab that I ran in the Alcibiades, which was probably a mistake. I think she's going to be a really nice filly on the grass at Gulfstream this winter.
What about Nagarok?
Nagarok is an exciting horse. He will go to California. He's going to run in the stake on the 30th, is it the 30th or 31st, the two-year-old stake at Santa Anita, as will G. Laurie. She'll run in the filly race that day.
Very good. Well, there we go. There's a lot to be excited about in the old Motion Barn.
You keep chugging along.
H. Graham Motion, everybody. Graham, I doubt we're going to talk, so maybe we will. But if not, happy Christmas, as they say, and we'll talk soon. Either way.
Thank you, Steve. Did it stop raining out there yet?
It finally has stopped, and the sun is now here. And, I think we've turned the corner.
Good. All right. Enjoy it.
Thank you. I'm not shivering, so that's a good sign. Graham Motion, everybody. And there you go. There's our first of the three coming to you from Santa Anita. And indeed, the skies have brightened. Thanks to Graham and Dick Powell for the HKIR. Really good visit from Carl Broberg, Steve Anderson on the quarters and more. And, of course, Tony Black and Hammer to pay tribute and acknowledge the passing of Joe Gracie, J.J. Gracie, and thanks to Joe for everything, for making this show possible. Talk to you tomorrow.
Oh, there goes a Buick 49, black sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul.